Hi, you know those promos where they tell you who they are and who you're listening to? Well, get ready to hear another one. Hi, everybody. This is Todd Glass, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Hi, I'm Kathy Ladman, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
This is Frank Nicotero, and you're listening to Storyworthy. You know that.
Hi, this is Amber Tozer, and I'm tweeting right now, but please listen to Storyworthy.
This is Christy Stratton, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
You're listening to what? Storyworthy.
Hey, it's Fred Stoller. You're listening to Storyworthy. Is that what it's called?
Hi, this is Ed Krasnick. You're listening to Storyworthy. And when you hear the word worthy, a lot of people don't know what worthiness means. And if you don't, I have some advice for you. Look it up.
Hey, this is Brant Tobler, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hello, it's Svetlana, and you're listening to Storyworthy. Stay tuned for more fun, festive stories. Thank you.
Hey, this is Jeff Kahn, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
I'm Jennifer Valley, and you're listening to the best podcast in the world, and that's Storyworthy.
It's Jim Krenn from Jim Krenn No Restrictions, and Christine's making me laugh here. I'm telling you, you got to listen to Storyworthy. Do not miss it.
Hi, this is John Mathot, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Hey, this is Joe Bartnick, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
This is John Thomas Griffith, and you're listening to Storyworthy Podcast with Hannes and Christine Blackburn. Serve them up.
Hey, it's Lee Keckner, and you're listening to Storyworthy. We're so happy you're here.
Hey, it's Johnny Hoops. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Hi, it's Mark Miller, and you're listening to Storyworthy. Look out, Bat Boy.
Hey, everyone, this is Matt Knutson, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
This is Matt Oswald, and you're listening to Storyworthy while Christine Blackburn is giving me a handjob under the table.
Hey, this is Troy Conrad. I'm trying to sound like Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Susanna Brisk, and I am thrilled to be on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Rodney, all right? Hey, all right, you're listening to Storyworthy, all right? Go fuck yourself.
Hey, this is Wayne Fetterman, and I'm here at Storyworthy.
Hey, guys, it's Nikki Levy. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey there, sweet tits. It's Rebecca Donahue. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey, it's Charles Freericks. You're listening to Storyworthy.
This is Sheila Ratner, and you're listening to Storyworthy. Now take off your clothes.
Hey, it's Penelope Lombard, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey, it's Paul Gilmartin.
And I don't mean to shock you, but you are currently listening to Storyworthy.
This is Steve Cooper from Cooper Talk, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey, it's Scott Boxenbaum, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Oye, es Luis Moro. Están oyendo a story, la historia que vale la pena, .com.
Hi, it's Mike Ziegel from the Travel Tales Podcast. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey, it's Jake Weissman, and you're listening to the Storyworthy Podcast.
Hey, it's Ron Zimmerman. Here comes Storyworthy, and it is a very worthy show.
This is Vito Lapicola from Comics on Comics, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hi, it's Naomi Grossman, Pepper from American Horror Story Asylum, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Say, bitch, this is Wally Rudolph with Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney. Get your helmet. You're not ready. Go and get your helmet. You're not ready for this.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're still at the strip club on Century Boulevard, but now we're getting lap dances.
We're celebrating our four-year anniversary, and this is part two, Hannes, part two with Todd Glass.
Todd Glass, and no one enjoys a good lap dance from a lady more than Todd Glass.
And, you know, Todd Glass is now an author, as you know.
He is.
He has a new book out called The Todd Glass Situation, published by Simon & Schuster. It's been out for just over a month now. It's getting rave reviews. Let me just read a few of these reviews, may I?
Gosh, that's podcast gold.
Todd Glass is truly a national treasure. Holy shit.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
Todd Glass's mother?
I'm glad Todd Glass was finally willing to share his story. Hopefully what he has to say will not only amuse others, it will perhaps make them think differently as well. That's the way the world changes.
Who said that?
I love that.
We don't know.
Because I do believe that it's one person at a time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You make a positive change, it will affect something else. I just made that up. Honest. Write that down, Todd. Oh, here's one.
That sounds like a secret.
Todd Glass is one of the funniest and smartest people around. His story tells a man who truly strives to be the best person he can be. Todd makes this world a better place.
He does.
Wow.
He does. He's actually glowing here in the room.
The Todd Glass Situation is a front row seat to the last 30-plus years of comedy history and a deeply personal story about one man's search for acceptance.
Right.
So, you guys, you do need to get over there to ToddGlass.com or Amazon.com. You know, if they go to Amazon.com...
They can go to StoryWorthyPodcast.com, click
first.
On the Amazon banner, buy the Todd Glass Situation.
That all
he gets
works
money,
out.
We get money. And by the way, in the back, the last 12 pages, all Sudoku. So that is really
so
something
funny.
That we've got.
All right,
so
you guys.
We should, let's
play another.
With Todd Glass.
All right, you guys. So let's play another jingle here for Todd Glass.
Thomas baking in the kitchen.
I love the effect.
Baking up the storm. Muffins, cookies, walnut brownies. Some of them are warm, I'll tell you. Todd Glass is here. And he's got something.
Of cookies.
This gentleman Todd Glass, he's back. Well, he didn't really leave.
I know it's self-indulgent, yes. But I love him. It's so much fun.
Cookies,
it's so self-indulgent, the jingles.
Oh, jingles are fabulous. Music, you know, okay, the other night you had your book premiere. What do you call it? Not a book premiere. You had your
book signing
at Skylight Books, and I was able to host the event.
Yes.
Because I host a lot of events at Skylight, and I asked to do yours personally, just so you know. Did I do a good job?
Well, can I tell you this? Even though I didn't say it there, I was, as I said, extremely still nervous.
You were nervous.
I was very nervous until I got up there, but when I got your text that said you were going to be hosting it, and that relaxed me because I'm like, well,
good.
We know each other, so
yeah,
you know. But yeah, because you know what it is, if people are all coming in, they know me,
mm-hmm.
then I'm excited. I'll go up there and be funny, and I'll go on too long because I love it. But if I have to sell myself, like let's say there's 30 people sitting there out of the, you know, there's some people in the group that don't know me, and I don't know where to start.
But how do you feel? Huh. How do you differentiate selling yourself than just being who you are? Like, to me, you are always the same guy. When I'm talking to you here with a microphone, you are the same guy as when I just see you in the hallway.
Well, I think that night proved it that I can just take people that don't know me and tell the story.
But that wasn't the first time. You do that
I do it on stage, but not about the book and not about sensitive topic.
I see.
At least to me.
You had that bookstore laughing so hard. Seriously, I was talking to my managers after you left, and nobody has ever made the bookstore that loud.
Well, I've that's why I told the crowd, I said, look, I don't want to be one of those people. I'm so nervous to use it as a crutch when you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Remember 20 minutes in, I went, I should be honest with you people, I'm not nervous at all anymore. I wanted them to know that, like,
well, you
relaxed
bring your own
me.
Little job box or whatever, and you're playing
it's
music.
It's kind of like the library or something. It's like it's grandmother's house. It seems like you shouldn't be loud and laughing in a bookstore.
And, yeah, and those guys.
And that makes those, often those book signings are horrific.
Not mine. I really try to make mine more.
But that's because you're making an effort, because you're coming from a background like you came here to be entertained. It's almost, it's not. Yeah.
He's right, because even me, like, I'm into not letting people sit in the deafening silence at a club. You would never. Whenever there's silence, I'm like, put music on.
Yeah, I
so
didn't like
what
that.
You just said was I didn't put the music on because I thought we're at a bookstore. And you walked over to me, you said, put some music on.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh,
right
really?
Away.
Great.
Yeah.
So now people are not walking into a bookstore in dead silence. They're hearing a little music. It sounds different.
Music is as important as light. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You turn the lights on in the room, turn the fucking music on. Because
yeah, well,
if it's
you,
sterile,
you
I
showed
can't
up.
Take it.
You showed up and we saw you through the giant glass wall that we have.
Today, yeah.
And Christine's like, put some music on, kill this silence. Like the sign. I can hear my own thoughts. I know I can't stand it. Put on some music.
Okay, listen, Todd Glass. I work with Peter Sprite. You know Peter Sprite?
Yeah.
Comedian.
Yeah.
And I mentioned
we're not best friends, but we're not.
Yeah, you know him.
Yes, I do.
He mentioned,
deadly enemies.
I mentioned to him that you were going to be on the 4-year anniversary, and he goes, I got a good Todd Glass story for you. I said, oh, really? What is that, Peter? And he goes, and you can tell him this, too. This is how nice of a guy Todd Glass is. He says, in 2000, I'm doing the Montreal Comedy Festival, and they had booked too many people. There were like 15 comics booked, and they're all big names. They were all, Zach Galifianakis, Patton Oswalt, Sarah Silverman, everybody's there.
I think I know what I did already.
And you
went up and did like 30 seconds.
You backed out, yeah.
And I, by the way, it's not because I didn't want to perform.
Well, of course, but it's because you're a nice guy.
Well, can I, you know,
you gave up your time. Who does that?
I'll feel better saying this, and it's hard to accept a compliment, but they feel good. But I feel better if I say it this way. And yes, I've said this before. It's a two-way street. It's not like I don't reap the benefits of it. So you know what I mean? Everyone listening knows what I mean. It's like, yeah, you're such a nice guy. And then you think, okay, I hope that I am, but I get something in return. And that's the
but
love.
This is show business.
Well, you know what, though? I will say this.
This isn't called I'm show not, love.
I think there's other people like it. I think comedians overwhelmingly are a good group. But when you're nice to newer comedians – first of all, then they're nice to you, and you get something. It's not like it's not like I'm giving everybody a $100 bill walking down the street and I'll never see them again. I'm being kind to people, which, hey, most of the time I hope it just comes from within me. But yeah, you got to realize when you're a little sad, or you just had a heated discussion with somebody in your family or your significant other. And then you walk into a club, and that doesn't mean you still can't be kind to people.
Yeah. Well, it's a community of comedians, and you want to keep yourself, you know, those are your coworkers, essentially.
Yeah. But you're reminding me of something that I thought of in the past, which is people downgrade selfishness like it's bad. But really, being nice and giving is actually the most selfish act you can do. In the best possible sense of the word selfish. It gives you back.
I love that you said it that way because, hey, look, it's not like I'm not willing to take the compliment. If someone goes, you're nice, yeah, that means a lot to me. But I like that way you just said it because it's like let's not build it up too much because I reap the benefits of it the other way. And by the way, I love talking about stand-up comedy.
Right.
And so when you're nicer to newer comics – you know, then you befriend them. And who else wants to talk about comedy as much as me? Most of my peers that have been doing comedy as long as me, some of them like Kindler and Eddie Pepitone, but most of them, they don't want to talk about it 24 hours a day.
Pepitone.
But a 22-year-old comic, you know, he or she, they'll sit around and they'll talk to you as much as you do.
Also, look, there's a ladder going up. There's a ladder going down. I mean, we should keep it all copacetic.
Yeah, that 22-year-old in 3 years might be the 25-year-old with the new hit sitcom.
Todd, tell me about when you were on Star Search in the 80s.
I don't remember that much about it. Except 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes, and just hating it.
Oh, really?
Yes. By the way, everyone was nice on it. Gary Mann was one of the – and who now is over at Comedy Central. He was one of the guys.
Married to Chrissy Stratton, man.
Oh. She's – you know what? I only met her a few times.
She was just on our show recently.
She's super sweet.
She's the best.
Very
sweet. Her story was about finding porn watching porn when she was babysitting. And then the next time she came to babysit, the guy's giving her instructions. He's like, okay, so put Billy to bed at 8 o'clock and you know, lights out at 8:15. And Chrissy, no porn. Somehow I'd seen it that she had – whatever. Anyway.
Oh, that's like your stomach
fantastic.
Goes, huh?
Yeah. Okay, so anyway,
yeah, it's actually worse if the dad goes, by the way, I left a little tape for you.
Yeah,
a lot worse, yeah.
A little something, something.
Okay, so Star Search, what were you going to say about that? He was on that show.
Oh, Gary was one of the I guess, the bookers. So he was nice to my friend Dave Rath, but the whole thing was just like, you know, it's like 2.5 minutes.
But had you aspired to go on there? I mean, was it a big deal at the time, Star Search?
Was it like Last Comic Standing?
I mean, to you at that time.
No, it was more like American Idol. Maybe not that big, but it was pretty big.
Yeah, oh, it was very big, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny about Last Comic Standing, I noticed? Not Last Comic Standing.
Star Search.
Is that when they used to discuss who made it on Star Search, it was always they go, Star Search, they got their start. But most of them that they mentioned lost, like, the first time on. You know, they had a few people like Rosie O'Donnell that won.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But most of them that they'll go, Dennis Miller was on Star Search. Yeah, he went one time.
Yeah, well, it's just like American Idol because the most successful alumni of American Idol lost. Carrie Underwood, that black chick who lost a lot of weight with Weight Watchers. What the hell is her name? She was nominated for an Oscar.
Jennifer Hudson.
Thank you.
Good one.
She lost.
Sean
it's
Merrick.
Like, and then there's, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like winning a thing like that is not.
Well,
you don't have the personality
of
a star to win that. You have the personality of a middle manager to win those competitions.
Right. Sometimes, by the way, there's exceptions. Some people win and are also great. So
Could you see yourself going on a show like Celebrity Apprentice? Would you do that?
You know, that's a good question. That's one of the shows that I've thought about.
You'd be
I'm
good.
Pretty good at, I think. Yeah, I probably, I don't think I would get offered.
I think you'd be great on that show. You'd be a great leader.
Couldn't do. I mean, I thought about it because it would help your career. I know Jeff Ross did it. And I understand why.
What?
There's no way I could do Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, wow. Adam Carolla did it, yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, to me.
That would be very hard.
I couldn't do it. The fact that, I don't know how far Adam went, but the fact that Adam could
He went far.
He could do, that's not easy.
It's like learning an entirely new sport. Yeah, it's like saying, okay, tomorrow you're going to be on TV doing fencing. Can you fence
Violinists with the Stars, you know?
Yeah. And they put a lot of work into it.
Violinists with the Stars.
They put a lot of work into it. And I think if you're on Last Comic Standing, let alone going someone like Adam who actually did go far, if you do it once, if you're able to get out there once, I couldn't even do it once because you got to be at least.
I would do it in a minute just because it's an experience. I mean,
but
sure,
don't
I'd
they
fall
test
flat
you
on my
a
face.
Little?
I don't think there's a test.
They don't see if you can just get by
dancing.
Remember
that Louis Anderson show where he was diving off diving boards?
Oh, God,
the
diving show. And he literally couldn't dive. Yeah, he couldn't dive off the higher platform. So he sat down and fell backwards off of a two-story platform.
Louis
Anderson.
Fairness to Louis, I probably couldn't do it either.
I
was watching this, making fun of him, and I'm like, oh, wait, I couldn't do this, and I don't weigh 1,000 pounds.
Are there
any
TV shows that you watch all the time?
Well, that's a good question in a weird way because I'm not one of these people that says there's not any good. There's so much good television.
Oh, my gosh. There's so much content. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's so much. And it's great. And there's shit. There's a lot of shit, too. But that's okay. There's there's great television more than any other time in the history of the universe.
What are a couple of the series that you've definitely followed?
I flip. I'm not a destination TV watcher. So, I never saw Seinfeld, really. I saw it once in a while till it was in reruns. Now,
leave the room.
Well, by the way, you should be proud of me. I get it now. I didn't never get it. I just never came home to watch it. But now that it's on 30 times a day, later, not just in the last year, but in the last – since it went off the air.
But that's also the version of what's become – instead of waiting for something to go into reruns and seeing it three times a night on TV, now it's Netflix and streaming. And that's how people they're like, you got to watch Breaking Bad. I'll wait till it finishes and then I'll watch the whole thing. But that's what people say.
There's still people that will either watch it exactly when it's on or watch it an hour later when they get
home. I do, but I'm old. I'm saying under 25.
The thing is now watching anything is like picking up a book. You can pick it up and read the book or put the book down or watch a show or put it down. But my question is, what are the three shows?
Yes, other one.
So the shows that I will –
I want to hear three.
When I'm flipping, 30 Rock does it for me.
Aww.
Yes.
Does it for me.
Yeah.
And this one –
Alec Baldwin's unbelievable. Did you ever meet him?
I never met Alec Baldwin.
I bet you will.
We were talking about him the other night, and I said, it's not that he just has comedic timing. Of course he has comedic timing, but a lot of actors have great comedic timing. When I saw him on Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, I turned to my comedian friend, and we both agree. We're like, he's like a fucking comedian. He thinks like a comedian. Even when he's being serious and he gets in the car and he said something about his – whatever he says, you're like, oh my God, that guy has the brain and the mind of a stand-up
comedian. What was the car for that? I can't remember.
I forget what it was.
And why have you not done Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
You know, to be completely honest, sometimes when you're on a podcast, you want to say it differently than you're off. But I would say if I was off the podcast, which now I'm basically saying on it, I would say I'm not a household name.
Oh, you will be. Or you are.
What?
In a lot of ways,
no.
You are.
But not. I get it.
Especially in comedians.
I have my following. But look, it's like I don't watch Letterman every night and go, why aren't I on there? Because I'm not a household name. And look who most of the guests Jerry have are like either his close friends or they're very big.
What kind of car would he put you in, do you think?
Oh, I would love it if we did it in an old Wagoneer with the paneling.
With a seat
facing
backward?
For a second, I thought you meant an actual wagon. That would be great, like a stagecoach.
No, like a country squire.
Yeah.
Well, not – that was the station wagon. The Wagoneer that they made until 1991, but even in 91, it looked like it was from the 70s.
Oh,
the big one with the paneling.
It was kind of like an SUV.
It was a wagon.
It's an early SUV, but with paneling on the side.
Wow, exactly. That would be hot.
So
30 Rock.
So 30 Rock, another show. And by the way, I have to over-preface this like I do everything else. I hope I have high morals in stand-up comedy. This says that it might disagree with what I think or not go along. Like, as far as don't be a bully with a microphone, make sure you're on the right side of history if you're up on stage telling the truth or you perceive to be but I am obsessed with Family Guy. Oh, and by the way, some of my close comedian friends will go, oh, no, I like it. I go, no. I am obsessed with it. And I know a lot of people that like it. First of all, there's a lot of people that are obsessed with it. But I'm talking about amongst my camp of friends.
Yeah.
But there's a few of us that when I am flipping around and Family Guy comes on, I know within 20 seconds that I'm going to be hyperventilating.
Yeah.
Like going kicking my bed.
Wow.
But what I meant was
those are big words.
I know sometimes they might make a joke with sexist or you perceive it to be racist or homophobic. I go, could I be this wrong? I think it might be. Hey, maybe some of it won't stand the test of time, you know, 30 years later when kids watch it. But I think Peter's the buffoon.
Wow.
And I think you earn the right to be ironic. In other words, by the way, I might be wrong, but isn't he so – they make great social points sometimes. Mm-hmm. They take a stab at homophobia sometimes or racism in a good way. So maybe they earn the right to do some things that when some people go, it's just a joke. It can't be a joke unless it's a juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. The reason when you're with some of your comedian friends, you can make ironic jokes, which I wouldn't even make on this podcast, because they know the way you feel. They know that – look, hate is funny sometimes. Remember what I just said about – anybody in the world, this I will come home with this. Anybody in the world wants the rights you have. That's how simple it is. Mm-hmm. Everybody you see that person? They want what you want.
Right.
So when you don't see that, when anybody in this world doesn't get that, that's funny to me because it's pathetic and it's sad and it's delusion. And sometimes comedy comes from delusion and absurdity. So to me, the fact that everyone doesn't realize that everybody wants the rights they want and to have hate for somebody because of the sexual orientation or the color skin, to me is absurd. It's fucking absurd.
Yeah.
So once you know that, and my friends and me all know that, we can mock it. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll use language around my friends because we've earned the right that we know how gross it is. Mm-hmm. So you have to do that on stage too. And you can't just go up on stage and go, it's comedy. It's only funny if they know you're mocking it. You have to earn that right.
So Family Guy.
I feel that maybe they earn it because sometimes they go out on a limb and they say the right thing. So when they're parodying that hatred, it comes from Peter or a buffoon or an idiot. Mm-hmm. So I hope, you know, so that's why I'm very much in love with that show.
Okay, Family Guy.
Family Guy 30 Rock.
What about one more? Do you do like a Breaking Bad or American Horror Story?
It's weird. I never do, and I don't know why. Same reason I don't see movies. I don't know why. I have a hard time following all those great shows.
I'm not talking about like,
by the way,
you know,
real quick, just so I'm very clear, because I'm not saying I don't like those shows.
Right.
I don't.
You just haven't done it.
I haven't done it.
I one time wanted to read all the classics, you know, literature. I just wanted to read Moby Dick. I wanted to read, To Kill a Mockingbird, just to have that. And I could not. I could not retain it. I can read nonfiction. I can whip through your book. I whip through Marc Maron's book, especially comedians. I whip through all those books. Comes to full-on retention. I would have a real hard time, but I'm not talking
Moby Dick.
About,
let's just say this.
I'm not talking about that.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about literature. I'm talking about Orange is the New Black is very simple. And so is Breaking Bad.
But I've been told that too. It's great. Sherry likes the show, my fiance. I have no interest yet in sitting down and watching it.
Oh, it's great.
And perhaps at some point, I will sit down and watch it and go, why didn't I do this earlier? But I always feel like with television shows, it doesn't matter that I didn't do it earlier, because it's like, you know, it's like I haven't seen a new episode of Simpsons at 8 o'clock on Sunday in forever. Doesn't matter. I'm going to see it. It's going to be on TV for the rest of my life.
Right.
I'm going to see it. Orange and the Black is going to be around. I'm going to be able to see it.
I'm just saying that I'm not asking Todd about why he doesn't read the classics. I'm asking him, pop culture. This is kind of what's going on right now. Or in the alternative, had you done that in the past? Did you do that with The Sopranos?
No.
Or say Dallas?
Never.
Or Dynasty?
Never.
Okay, it's descending quickly off the TV mountain.
The biggest? Yeah, those shows, even I might have been, well, I guess I wasn't too young to follow that plot. I didn't care. I was too young to care, I think. I don't know if other kids my age cared. But the only thing I've ever really cared about, like, you know, who shot JR and those type of things, was when they killed the dog on on Family Guy. When they killed... I was like, what? They killed
Brian.
Am I forgetting?
Brian.
That was the only one you followed through, right?
Yeah, they killed Brian. I was worried. I was like, not worried, but like obsessed. Like, I'm glad they brought him back.
That's interesting.
But again, those shows, what you said about when you finally watch it, that's always true. Like, people beg me to watch a show, and then when I finally do, I go, oh, I love this. But for whatever the reason is.
I just wanted to say something off of what you said about earning. The irony, it's like, I always say that there's only two kinds of jokes, funny jokes and unfunny jokes. But the context does make a difference. Like, there's a kid I work with at work. He's like 25 years old, and he's Hispanic, and he would always make these Mexican jokes. And so he's telling the joke to me, so I laugh, and then I find out he's like Honduran. So suddenly I'm a racist because I'm laughing at his Mexican jokes out of nowhere. But now I can say to him out of nowhere, I'm like, you were in the break room. I'm like, oh, some coffee would be good. Go make me some coffee. And it's just he laughs because the kind of, he knows
you've
that I'm not being serious.
Yeah.
But if somebody heard me say that, they'd be like, wow, what a racist telling the Hispanic guy to go get some coffee beans for him. You know, it's weird. Yeah, it's all about the context.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Todd, let me ask you, how is it being on the road now?
I love it.
Great.
I do love it. There's a tremendous amount of new, really cool comedy clubs that have a creative backbone, which usually—
They're kind of getting it more.
There always were the ones that got it, but I feel like there's a new bunch of these. People have figured out that, you know, you can have a very little club. Like, I work at the Laughing Skull in Atlanta. It's just a great club. And that club only holds 80 people. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, he's in an existing business, you know, where they found a room. Like, a restaurant had this room that held 80 people, so they just didn't use it. So they, you can put a comedy club in there. And it's nice. It's not an afterthought. It's 80 people. You walk in. It feels special. There's a big red curtain. It opens before the show. The
terrific.
Music comes on. There's a backstage. Oh. There's a nice green room. But you think, how does he afford to fly people in? 80? He can. You just do the revenue, 80 people, you do the math, and he makes a nice living. He flies comedians in. We stay at a nice hotel. So once his worked, I realized, I hope other people realize you don't need 100,000 or half a million to open up a comedy club. You can do it with not that much money if you know what you're doing. So that and clubs like the Acme and the Helium. Now, Helium is like a 250, 300 seat room, but there's a tremendous amount of really great comedy clubs.
What's the one in Portland?
Portland is a Helium too.
Right, that's a Helium. And you said you like that one.
It's the best.
Oh, that's such good. That's really great. I'm glad. And now that you obviously you have a cell phone with you, you have your computer with you, you can be on the road. It's not that hard.
Let me tell you something. I also love my home and I love coming home, but I love the road. I don't go on the road for a month at a time, but I always say the same thing. I would still love to get on a tour bus and maybe tour for
I would like to do the train, you know, the rock and roll train. Do you ever hear of that? That goes down like from the Canadian Rockies down to Mexico, and you get on a train with just a bunch of great musicians and you just go for weeks.
I would like that. I think I could like
you
that
get
too.
On a comedy train. That might be exhausting.
Yeah. Being trapped in a tube with a bunch of comedians.
What's going on with the second book? Now, see, that's what happens, right? You put out one book, then they're going to ask you about the second one.
You know what? I thought about that. Like, I think – I don't know, but right now I'm just hoping this would be too good. But, you know, I have been like – my friends have been like, would you do another book or what would you do? So you just start thinking about it.
What about instead of the Todd Glass situation, it could be the Todd Glass resolution?
Oh, I don't – a Todd Glass resolution? That's got a good ring to it.
Or Senator Todd Glass. Introducing Senator Todd Glass.
Maybe I call it preaching to the choir.
Oh, I love that.
You know, ways to help you fight the fight, you know.
I love that.
Because I did want to – if I was going to write a book, it would be – I mean, I talked about a lot of that stuff I wanted to in the book. I did get a lot of my thoughts in my head out. But I still think, you know, there's – I don't know. I thought about doing like a cookbook for people that hate to cook. Because I'm the king of doctoring.
Yeah.
So, but that would be more of a lighthearted book.
Well, I also think that cookbooks are tricky because you can, like, cookbooks are almost obsolete because you would just go online to look for a recipe. I mean, I know what you're saying as like a whimsical, funny book, but I go online all the time. What I do when I look for recipes, I put easy in the first word. It's always easy. So it's easy macaroni and cheese which is redundant.
But no, mine is more how to buy something and present it nicely. There's a lot of tricks like that you don't realize. Like, can I give you one?
Give me.
It's like a good I'll give you two. Because one is like a different type of a
trick. One.
You're cut off at one. Son. Todd Glass, get the hell out of here.
I got to tell you two. One is like, you know, those – if you're not a good cook.
Yeah,
you don't have – look, the presentation, it says you can still present it. Like, you can go get those roasted chickens at the supermarket.
Right.
You know, they know what they're doing. They're pretty good.
They're very good.
And then you bring them home. You put a little rosemary on top. Maybe and pour a little olive oil and stick it in the oven. So when you pull it back out, it's got some fresh,
something to it.
And the other one is I don't like to cook, but I do love – first of all, I don't mind setting the table. I love not only setting a table but with like 20 people.
That's sweet.
It looks awesome.
Sure.
And you know there's a lot of good things about to happen. I love the look of a set table. I'll set it the night before and when I go to the bathroom, I'll look at it like 3
I know,
in the morning.
I do that too.
It looks so fucking cool.
If I clean my kitchen or I clean any room, I go peek at it at
you
night.
Can look at
I'm
it,
on
right,
my way to the bathroom. It's 3 in the morning, and I run in and look at my daughter's shelf because I just organized it.
I'm with you.
Oh, it's
but
such a thrill.
The other one, like, and I have a million of these. This is, I think, a really good one. At first, they didn't really know what I wanted, but there's, you know, sometimes there's like a pizza place, but they also make like you have their lasagna once to try that. You're like, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
But if you order that food to your house, you got to what they call replate it. If you're having company.
You should always replate the food. Right.
But it's a pain in the ass. They get there and in front of them, you have to, I always try to quickly like get it replated and throw out the all the shit they give you with it.
Yeah. I hate all that plastic wrapping and then there's like utensils. Yeah.
Horrible. So what I do is at first they didn't understand. I bring the bowls to this little pizza place. And I said, do you mind, you know, blah, 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 making it. And so they have to cook it in their bowls because they can't stick your bowls in their hot ovens. But here's the thing. I gave him at the end, I said, here's $20 just in case. I don't want to forget to take care of you. Once I did that, you could tell he was like, he goes, I'll tell you what, when you want the food at your house in a half an hour, just call me and we'll have it there. Well, all of a sudden, they knock on the door. The lasagna is in your bowl with tinfoil over it. The garlic bread's in the basket you gave them with tinfoil over it.
That is so adorable.
And the last thing is that when they bring it into your house. Now, here's the way you buy yourself time. You make a salad. So here's what happens. You sit down. Everyone's eating the salad. Either you're 10 minutes in the salad and the food comes, and that's okay too. Or you're done. You're completely done and the dinner hasn't come. It's going to come within 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So that salad buys you that grace period. But when they walk in, the guy was great. He like took the tinfoil off and he said, this is this. He took the other bowl. He put it on the table. He goes, this is this.
Yeah. You're not even talking about a cookbook. You're talking entertaining.
There's also other either. That's okay. It's a mixture of cook and how to doctor,
it's
how to
Martha
present.
It's a Martha Stewart thing. It's an evening at home with Todd Glass.
It's a little of both because there are things I can tell you how
Here's
to doctor.
Here's the show.
Dinner party
you, the
with
Martha
Todd
Stewart
Glass.
Show, not Martha Stewart you. And it's like you have a kitchen and you show that the shelves are completely empty and somehow all the food is going to come in from the outside.
For what it's worth, and I know we're going to a close, it is some cooking tricks. Like I figured this out. I don't know why. You get any Chinese food. You get chicken and vegetables, mm-hmm. right? You get two orders of it.
Yeah.
You bring it home. Hey, maybe this can even work if you're a little low in your budget and you want to stretch out. You get two orders of chicken and vegetables. I don't know why this tastes great. You bring it home. You put it in a pan. You crack 4 eggs into it and cook it up. And it's like... Fuck.
What?
Yeah.
You're super egging your food.
Whatever it is.
I could eggs go with everything, baby.
It fills it up. By the way, there is a little egg in some Chinese dishes anyway. That's why I thought about it.
Uh-huh.
So I crack 4 eggs, stir it up. It beefs it up a little. It makes it fuller.
A little fluffier.
Yeah. And then it's like, it's really good.
Wow.
So little things
Have
like that.
Have you ever heard of dump cake?
I did hear that.
Could they have a worse possible name?
Dump.
Not like quick cake, no. Which is the point.
Dump
or not
it.
Like easy cake. Dump.
Dump.
Dump it together
dump
in a bowl.
It in. Dump it in. Take a shit.
It's like, hey, how about gravity cake? You're using gravity to do the mixing. No, dump. Yeah.
Hey, by the way, at that point, why don't you buy a fucking cake? Well, people could say that with my... Chinese idea.
But there's
too.
Dump meals too.
I know. Like you throw the Chinese idea, you're changing it, and I'm going to do that. I'm seriously going to do that. That thing where I take the bowls to the store, I'm never going to, the restaurant, never going to fucking do that. But the egg
Why
thing.
Why do you take the tone out of your voice, mister?
Well, he doesn't have that panache that you do, Todd.
Okay, let me tell you one more. It's the same thing. I'll make it quick.
Okay.
I know we got to go to a close. The sushi is the worst. There's some really good sushi. But what I mean, when it comes, it has the soy packets, it just looks shitty.
Out of control.
So what I do
Those
is I bring
gone.
A dish. I bring a tray.
A platter.
And I bring it in.
Bring your own boat. A BYOB.
Whatever you want
to
put it in.
To the sushi place, take a boat.
Whatever you want to do. A
that
boat.
Is such
I bring
a
flat
idea.
Tray because then on the flat tray, they knock on your door. I say, no soy packets. I put the soy bottle
please,
out on the table.
Please, yeah.
I know nothing. So on this big plate, whatever you order, the sushi, the mustard, the ginger, and it's just boom on the table.
I am so in line with you when it comes to this messiness that comes with takeout food. I hate that.
Yeah.
Wow. Here's one more. A trick that I like is when I'm going to a party, if I have to take something, I'll just go to Albertsons and get their fried chicken and I'll put it on my own platter and put a little stuff on top. And people go flipping crazy over the fried chicken.
Because here's the deal. It's great all by itself, but then when you add that presentation, it brings
God.
It home.
Just,
I do,
just going crazy.
A lot of the tricks I found from like a friend of mine, Meg, growing up, what she would do, like she, for an appetizer, if she was really wanted to do something easy, you order two pizzas, You ask them to cut them in squares. Sometimes you do it anyway. But then you put some like basil leaves on the top.
Yeah.
You put it on your kitchen counter.
And then like with children, we call that a double cut. You double cut and then it's more pizza, isn't it?
Right.
But it's a smaller amount.
Yeah.
It's an appetizer pizza. It's a pizza app.
I used to be embarrassed about talking about this stuff because...
Oh, don't be.
Well, especially when I was, you know, still in the shed.
Yeah.
I thought it didn't perceive to be manly, so I would hide it. But at this point, I'm like, look, you admitted that about yourself. You may as well not be embarrassed about that.
Yeah, who doesn't want to have people over in a comfortable environment and you know, wasting time on throwing things away and, you know, and scraps of paper? No, we don't need that. Yeah. We're keeping it clean.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Story, Worthy?
Damn right I do.
Can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Vacation. When I was little, we all went on a family vacation in my – we drove actually to Florida. And like a lot of little kids, we would be fighting and fighting. And my parents were super young at the time because they had us young. This makes sense when I think about why would they do this? Yeah, because they were probably in their late 20s. And whatever it was, we did something. And my mom and my dad said, that's it. We're going home. And we knew we were close. We knew that that morning when we woke up, we were going to drive into Disneyland that day. They go, we're going home. We pulled out of the hotel, we turn, and we head back home. They weren't kidding around. And we drove, and we were quiet, and we were not crying, but we were like, they're doing it. And I couldn't believe it. And then, just out of nowhere, my brother hits me, and he goes, shh, look, and it said, welcome to Disneyland. We were like, oh my God! Even at that young age, we knew that... We didn't know which way we were driving, and they knew we wouldn't see signs. Like, nobody saw. You would think, we could have seen, you know, 700 miles to Philadelphia, but we didn't. So my parents benefited, and we were never so excited.
That is such a great story. Oh, my gosh. I was going to say, if your parents really did that,
I know.
That would fucking scar you for life.
Well, I was going to say they'd be the greatest parents in the world. I'm not a parent.
The reason I told it that way was because before that, in our heads, we're like, this is another one of those times. And the only other time in the history of our childhood when my mom kept her word, you know, usually
yeah,
to say,
right.
It was one year. I don't know why this was a big deal. She goes, you're not watching Wizard of Oz.
Uh-huh.
But we're like, we're watching Wizard of Oz, you know. And then we were like, no, we didn't go watch Wizard of Oz. We're like, okay, this is that type of thing.
My daughter, you know, she gets four privileges a day, as it were. Let me tell you how to do a little parenting to a seven-year-old, if you need this information. She gets three TV shows a day and a half hour on the iPod. That's my I don't know how I chose that. That's just what we choose. And if she, you know, messes up, well, here's what she's not allowed to do. She's not allowed to yell, scream, stick out her tongue, or hit the cat. Again, I think these are very broad.
I've been in your house for a minute, and she's done all four of those things.
I mean, I'm not trying to, like, bring down the hammer, but one at a time. So the shows are always The Simpsons. So she watches The Simpsons. All three shows a day are The Simpsons. So, boom, one Simpsons is gone. Two Simpsons is gone. Three Simpsons is gone. And she just can't fucking believe when I get down to the iPod. She looks at me like, you would never, never take this away from me. And if I take it, oh, my gosh. I've taken it. Yeah, I've done it. That's right. But honestly, probably only once or twice. Like, it never gets to that level.
Good. That's, you know, that's good positive reinforcement. Good ways.
I start talking about a kid, and Todd Glass was like,
oh, no,
in his
what?
Car driving home.
No, you know what? No, you know what? I'm going to prove how wrong you are. I was thinking, I know we're going in for the clothes. You just sparked, like, everything you talk about, believe me, it sparks me. And I thought, I like that type of parenting because, look, I get it. It's hard to be a parent. But I realized something one day, and I, when I was working at the Mirage opening up for somebody, We got to go pet the dolphins. Now I even have different feelings about the petting, you know, because they had at the Mirage.
Enclosed.
I have different feelings about that even.
Why
happening.
There would be dolphins in the desert in an aquarium for you to look at?
Yes. But at the time, it's still.
And then you bring your own platter. They will cut the dolphin up and put it on your own platter so you can take it home
after it rides you around the pool.
After it dies of a natural death. Yeah.
But when I wasn't aware of that, I wasn't thinking, oh yeah, that's unnecessary. And I thought they did it with, you know, oh, they give a lot of money to charity. I thought it doesn't matter. I asked them how they train them. And this still is interesting, even though, you know, my feelings about the capturing them and having them in captivity, I don't think is right. I asked how they train them, and they said it's all positive reinforcement. And then I went, oh, isn't that funny? So you never have to spank the dolphin or and of course, and she goes, well, it really changed my belief on the raising children. She goes, now I was never a child abuse. I've never abused my child, but I did spank. And then I thought, wait a second, if I don't have to spank a dolphin and we can get it to do these miraculous things,
right.
Then maybe I should apply that to my children.
Wow.
And I love what she said. She goes, a lot of people, when you tell that, and I love it because it echoed everything I believed, and this is someone that had kids, so she could fucking talk. Yeah. I don't have kids.
Yeah.
People think when you say you don't spank, even spank your children, they think you're saying it's easy. So therefore, they write, oh, come on now. She goes, oh, my God, it's hard. Kids can be manipulative, and they can twist you, and they can fuck with your – but that's not how we decide what's right and wrong.
Two different things.
There's two different things. The fact that it's tempting and you want to sometimes – she goes, but I take deep breaths. If I have to rip a phone book, she goes, but it's all taking away something they like. And let me – like everything, I'll go a little long. But this echoes something that I think my brother said too. The reason it's hard to make your word powerful is because every time you take something from a child, she sees how it's hard because it makes they're in your company more. Mm-hmm. So if you say to your child, no TV, well, that means sometimes your TV is what gives you a little breath of fresh air. Or you're not going camping with your friends this weekend. Mm-hmm. Well, that weekend comes, that meant you and your wife maybe had 2 days away. Whenever you take something away from them, they're in your presence a little more. So you're tempted to go, all right, watch TV. But when you stick to your word, when you do like my parents, if you go no, and you establish your word as a fucking, you're not fucking around.
Yeah.
The next time you're in a public area, it's amazing. You can turn to your kid and whisper and go, no TV for a month.
Yeah.
And they know you're not fucking around. But you gotta earn that.
Yeah. You gotta earn it. And the thing is a lot of parents are already coming at the place where that ship has sailed. So now they're starting over. You know what I mean? They have to reestablish authority because they don't have it anymore.
Yeah, it's too late by then. It's too late.
They've already given it away.
Well, that's their fault.
I know, but I'm just saying it. So there's kind of they have to get reeducated as to how to think. I think with children, at least at this time in her life, she's only seven, that the idea is not to say, Alabama, if you do this, I'll give you this. It's like, no, you're supposed to feed the cat, she's supposed to pull up her bedspread, she's supposed to put her clothes in the laundry. And so those are the things like, if she doesn't do them, she gets something taken away. It's not like, go make your bed and I'll give you a treat.
Right. Well, I agree with that.
Yeah, it has to be, there has to be like, you're already supposed to do all these things. That just makes you like a normal person growing up.
Right.
It has to be, there's like a little reverse thing. You have to be the smarter person. And that's not always easy.
Well, of course it's not easy.
No, I see these kids at work and it's like, you know what? Right there, you just hit it. Many parents are not the smarter person.
Yeah,
they're dumb people have kids all the time. And I see a kid and I realize, oh, my God, your 8-year-old is literally outwitting you.
Mm-hmm.
They're manipulating you by outthinking you. They're not like causing a tantrum or something. That's a tough.
And again, you're going to pay the price for thinking I was driving home already, because I will say one more thing about this. That's why. Hey, look, I don't agree with everything Dr. Phil does. And sometimes he does things when I want to go, what? But where, you know, in life, the way you gain your friends is sometimes their good qualities are so overwhelming that when they have their bad qualities, the qualities you don't like, you accept it because what they offer is so great. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel about him. I constantly am warmed. I put this in the book. I thank him for watching him defend children.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love that he does, so what he said once, which I love, because sometimes even me, you see a kid, you go, you know what that kid needs? He said to a young girl, I'm not crazy about your topical behavior. And no matter what life gave you, you're going to have to overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know why this is happening. And then he turns to the parents. And that's the part they're not ready for. Because sometimes they'll spend 20 minutes. You think, oh, he doesn't see this kid. He's going, you can't do that. Why did you do this? And he's calling them on all their bullshit. The parents are happy. They're like, thank God. And then he turns to them. Yeah. And they're not ready for that to go, you know, yes, you are responsible for this. And I think I love to see him give children a voice. And I remember him turning to a girl once who did not like him. But once he started to defend her a little, not saying your topical behavior is appropriate, not saying it doesn't have to fucking stop.
But I see where it came from.
I see where it came from. And it's not just because you had pretty goddamn good parents that messed up.
Yeah.
No. He turns to her and he goes, let me ask you a question now. Do you like me a little more? For this old, bald guy, do I understand you? And she started to cry.
Oh, wow.
You can't fake that. Yeah. Not only did she not cry before that, you think, he's not breaking through. This is a tough son of a bitch kid. But she heard an adult taking what was in her mind and speaking it articulately and diligently. And then when he looked at her and said,
yeah,
for an old bald guy, how am I doing? And she started to cry.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, yeah, she felt heard.
Hey, there's an amazing interview with Barry Katz that Barry did you hear that one with Dr. Phil? That's a great.
I didn't hear it, but I got to ask. I thanked him for doing that.
Yeah.
And I played my question.
Really?
I played
terrific.
My question in the beginning of it, so I really? Never heard it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, just go back. Barry Katz's podcast.
I will.
It's called
Industry Standards.
Industry Standards. It's very
He was
good,
on my podcast,
very
too.
Very good. Barry was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great.
The
yeah.
Todd Glass podcast?
Yeah.
Todd Glass show. Hey, Todd speaking of Todd Glass, let's play this one last jingle, and then we got to wrap it up. But this is a beautiful jingle by Allie Gertz.
Oh, this is pretty.
It is pretty, isn't it? She goes by the moniker Cosby Sweater. Isn't that beautiful?
Allie.
She's just fantastic. My daughter loves her music so much. And all of her music is very much adult lyrics. And my daughter just nails every single lyric. She loves her. It's amazing.
She also has a song about Milhouse.
Because The Simpsons, right? So it always goes back to The Simpsons with my
exactly.
daughter.
Oh,
well, it's
my
very
gosh.
Sweet. Thank you. I would give you a kiss if you were here. So I'll do it through the mic.
Oh, that was very nice. Well, Todd Glass, listen, thank you so much again for coming. And your book, The Todd Glass Situation, is just fabulous.
Thank you.
Congratulations for writing
In
that.
In your bookstores now.
It's a big, big, big deal. Really.
Thank you.
Really.
Yeah,
and
thank
congratulations
you very much.
On
it was
your
awesome.
Career, obviously, as well.
Say that again?
And congratulations on your career.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And on behalf of all of our fans out there for Storyworthy, thank you all so much for 4 years of support.
4 years. And we look forward to year five.
We look forward to year five. We couldn't do it without you guys. So don't forget to head over to storyworthypodcast.com for all of your Storyworthy information.
Sure. Or go to patreon.com/storyworthy.
Oh, yeah.
To see how you might
too.
Be able to help us out on
That's
a monthly
right.
basis.
Head over to iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. We're on all those places. You know that. And on behalf of everybody here at Sideshow Network, especially Sean Merrick and, of course, John Thomas Griffith, you know, he's the guy who wrote our theme song, Follow Me, Hannes.
I do know that. I'm finally acknowledging his existence for our fourth anniversary.
There you go. And on behalf of our fabulous guest today, Todd Glass, and, of course, you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host.
Thank
my
you.
Name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass,
Liza Schlesinger. Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.